Is America going to experience another Biden versus Trump matchup? I'm Skynell Hughes, and on this episode of 360 View. While American voters might feel like they're experiencing deja vu, with one candidate facing 91 charges in court and the other candidate facing chaos both at home and abroad, the race to electing the 47th president of the United States is guaranteed to be filled with many surprises. Let's get started. The two first major hurdles of the 2024 campaign season are now in the books. With the campaigns of Vivek Ramaswamy, Senator Tim Scott, and Governor Ron DeSantis also left to history. Former President Donald Trump took a historic win in the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary, using his victory speech in New Hampshire to take a stab at his final remaining primary opponent, Nikki Haley.
You know, you have to have people that speak up. I said, I can go up and I can say to everybody, oh, thank you for the victory. It's wonderful. It's one. Or I can go up and say, who the hell was the imposter that went up on the stage before and, like, claimed a victory? She did very poorly, actually.
Now, Haley lost to Trump by 11 points in the New Hampshire primary. But she made a promise in her concession speech to stay in the race.
Now, you've all heard the chatter among the political class. They're falling all over themselves, saying this race is over.
It's not over!
Well, I have news for all of them. Woo! New Hampshire is first in the nation. It is not the last in the nation. This race is far from over. There are dozens of states left to go. And the next one is my sweet state of South Carolina.
Now, Joe Biden and Donald Trump are far in the lead of their competitors. However, according to the latest Decision Desk poll, about 59% of Americans do not want a rematch between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. Now, this rematch might be inevitable, despite what Americans' wishes might be. The Democrats were not going to lame duck their own president by suggesting a replacement, and the MAGA base is still the most loyal and unified coalition within the GOP. While Trump might have a long list of haters on the right side of the aisle, it was unrealistic to think any candidate besides Donald Trump would be able to sway support away. The best any of these Republican challengers could hope for would be Trump ruled ineligible because of one of these impending court cases. But for the GOP, this primary season has proven the conservative wing of the Republican Party is the most dominant number amongst its membership, while the more moderates continue to try and find a place. Let's discuss this with our panel, political analyst and GOP commentator Malik Abdul, here in studio with me, and Steve Gill, host of The Steve Gill Show. And we have a former congressman from Florida, Alan Grayson, a wide, diverse panel of opinions. I'm so appreciative of all of you joining me today. Also, I want to point out Alan Grayson's book that he actually wrote called High Crimes, The Impeachment of Donald Trump. So therefore, I guess, Congressman, you're not a fan of Donald Trump.
No. Honestly, he probably should get sick and you know what. And then go to H-E-L double toothpicks forever.
Well, I'm glad that you're holding back your opinions right from the front. That's exactly what I expect from the three of you. I want to, before we get to these front runners like Donald Trump, I want to take a look at a quick reflection on these past two primaries. Nikki Haley finished second in Iowa and second in New Hampshire. She finished third in Iowa, second in New Hampshire, not even competing in Nevada, going over to South Carolina where she is double digits below her opponent, Donald Trump. If the New Hampshire primary, with all of these numbers, why is Nikki Haley still in this race? And I want to start with you, Malik, on this. Why?
Well, because as she said, after Iowa, it's a two-person race. I think that what Nikki Haley is doing, she's carved out a space in the establishment lane as she's being attacked for being the establishment. And I'm actually perfectly fine with her being in the race because at the end of the day, there is no indication that she will win South Carolina. So even if she's in the race for another month, there won't be any debates happening. Whether or not she has a town hall and people turn into the town hall, that's on her. But I ultimately don't have an issue with it. But it does seem as if she's competitive in the sense being able to get more moderate voters that Trump is actually lacking. I think there's an advantage of having her not just in the race. You know how I am. I think that she should be his VP choice.
Okay, we're going to get to that question, but real quick before I move on, what role does money, though, play in her staying in this race?
Well, unless her donors say, okay, time is up, she's going to continue.
We've already
to do
seen
it.
The LinkedIn founder that gave $250,000 to one of the PACs, not giving any more.
Unless you are funding your own race, that determines how long you can stay into the race. So if the donors say it's time to get out, then Nikki Haley will get out. Well, she just has enough money to go until South Carolina.
Until South Carolina. Well, speaking of money on this one, because Vivek Ramaswamy came in himself full of his own, but did not necessarily raise any. Steve, Vivek Ramaswamy believed he could actually win this nomination. Or do you think he was in it for another reason?
Well, I think he was in it to set himself up for down the line, and I think he has set himself up for down the line. But this is all about money. As long as Nikki Haley has billionaires willing to fund their super PACs to attack Donald Trump, which is mainly what they're there to do, she'll be able to move forward. And these political consultant class, and I'm sure that Alan and Malik will both agree, it's all about them and their money. You know, when they raise $100 million, they're going to raise $10 million for themselves for raising it. They're going to get 15% for placing the TV ads. They're going to charge another 5 or 10% for producing the TV ads and for managing the super PAC. About a third of what goes into these super PACs goes into the pockets of the super PAC folks themselves. And as long as Nikki is listening to them saying, oh, yeah, we can move on because they're sucking money out of the pot, she's going to keep listening to them rather than the fat lady. We've all heard, you know, the opera. The opera's not over till the fat lady sings. The fat lady is singing loudly, but Nikki Haley's only listening to the political consultants telling her, oh, yeah, you can still win this. We can still make another 25 or 30 million for ourselves.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, and I think that's the one thing I love to hear politicians and people, like, they scream about the money in politics, and yet they continue to realize and continue to raise it. Alan, I've got to ask you, there was lots of talks of Democrats in New Hampshire switching over to either independent or actually registering as Republicans back in the fall when they had the ability to do so. What is your feeling as a Democrat looking at this? Is it because they actually like Haley, or do they believe that Haley might be an easier pickoff for Joe Biden just in case she was the nominee?
No, it's that they hate Trump. And New Hampshire creates a very interesting dynamic in that regard, where there's a sort of a built-in animosity vote toward whoever is most likely to win. And I will point out, I think that she's an incredible phony, but I will point out that Haley came closer to Trump than McCarthy did to Johnson, and Johnson dropped out. So these are real trials that are worth having. And I was actually pleased in the end that New Hampshire stuck to their guns and had their primary, even though the party stripped them of their votes in doing so on the Democratic side, not the Republican side. So New Hampshire is a very, very interesting and different test from what we're going to see down the line, where they have closed primaries and only Republicans can vote.
Well, one of the stories out of New Hampshire I think not many people were talking about, Malik, and you hinted at it, was the vice president pick. Very few people referenced it, but yet we saw a whole parade of potential Trump picks paraded out there on election on the New Hampshire primary night. Who is on your list of people that you think Trump should pick, and who actually should he pick?
Well, I'll just say this about the New Hampshire, just quickly, though. Nikki Haley actually overperformed in New Hampshire because the polls had Donald Trump beating her by a larger margin. So she actually did better than what people thought. But on my list, the top of the list for me really is Tim Scott. I think that Tim Scott not only has a good relationship with the president, because the loyalty question comes up a lot. Who's going to be loyal to Donald Trump? And if you've actually heard Tim Scott, if you've read Tim Scott's book talking about the relationship that he has with Donald Trump, I think that he's a good fit. And what's important to me is not just these 4 years, it's what happens after Donald Trump leaves. Because if Donald Trump picks someone, for instance, like a Vivek Ramaswamy, someone who potentially cannot win in 2028, his legacy ends in 2028. So he has to choose someone who can win in 2028, lest his legacy just dissipates after he leaves.
Steve Gill, can you believe you just heard a Republican strategist actually thinking long term involving presidential picks? The Republican Party is not known for thinking that. Who is on your list? Could you be happy with Tim Scott as the vice president? Is there someone else you have?
Republicans consider it long-term thinking when they're trying to figure out where they're going to lunch next Monday. So I am pleased that at least some of us are thinking a little bit further than that. Let me make one quick point about both Iowa and New Hampshire. I think you only had about 100,000 people participate in the Iowa caucus. You had a couple hundred thousand participate in New Hampshire, which was their largest turnout ever, thanks to those Democrats crossing over. And most of them on election night were, you know, admitting to CNN they were just there to hurt Trump, not to try and join the party and move forward together. But, you know, we've let 300,000, 400,000 votes, you know, really kind of roil the whole presidential campaign. And it happens every 4 years. Everybody's out before we even get to Super Tuesday and get to these mainstream states. And I think, again, it just kind of contorts the process out of what's reality as we look towards a general. I think that as I look towards the VP pick, and I'm always reminded that those who are talking within the Trump camp don't know, and those who know aren't the ones that are talking. So I don't think we can give much credence to anybody leaking out who is going to be the VP pick. I like Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She's a governor. She is less hot in terms of the rhetoric than Donald Trump, but is completely trusted by Donald Trump. I think, Tim Scott's another good choice. I think there are a lot of good choices, but the bottom line is, who doesn't hurt you? I don't think a VP pick helps you moving forward. I think it can hurt you, and I think it is a great distraction for people to speculate as we head from, you know, when the pick is finally done to when the presidential nominee picks their VP.
Oh, but Steve, we've got to have drama. Come on, now the Kardashians are out of season right now. There's no Real Housewives. Of course, we've got to look to politics to have something to talk about at the water cooler. Politics, though, is also on the Democrat side, because two-thirds of Americans believe this country is on the wrong track. That's usually not good for the guy who's sitting in the Oval Office. Alan, do you think Democrats are doing what is expected by keeping Biden, or should they actually be listening to the people and possibly looking at another candidate?
Well, an incumbent president has enormous power and influence over every party. You have to go all the way back to the Civil War and Andrew Johnson to see a president who completely flubbed getting his party's nomination as a sitting president. He came in fourth, but that was after he was impeached. If you are president of the United States, even if you're out of office, you have enormous power. Teddy Roosevelt demonstrated that on multiple occasions. So it shouldn't surprise anybody. I think that President Biden has exceeded many people's expectations. He has, in fact, gotten some important legislation passed, and he continues to do so. The economy is the best it's been in decades, and foreign policy seems to be under control. I disagree with you when you said at the beginning of this segment that things were out of control. I don't see it that way. Biden is doing what he needs to do to help two important allies, running into a lot of resistance, and maybe soon we'll be asking ourselves who lost Ukraine. It won't be Joe Biden. Well, so I think that Biden is using the levers of power in order to get his second nomination, and that's what everybody does.
But, you know, it's interesting you bring up the foreign policy aspect and you say it's under control. I don't think people know the nuts and bolts of what's going on in Ukraine or even Israel. They might just know a generic, this is who they support, but they don't know why. I think the majority of Americans are not necessarily paying attention in that way. But they know that there's potential two conflicts, and you also have Taiwan and China sitting out there as well. Isn't that enough, though, to damage Biden's credibility on foreign policy with Democrat voters?
Not at all. Putin started the war in Ukraine. Nothing Biden could have done to prevent it. Hamas started the war in Gaza. Nothing Biden could have done to prevent it. It's foolish to think that Biden is somehow, quote, responsible for this. And when Trump says that he'll end them both quickly, that sounds just like President Nixon's secret plan to end the war, which was so secret that even Nixon didn't know it because he didn't have one.
Well, it's very interesting. You know, this time, January of 2020, Donald Trump was still extremely popular with the people, and then we saw what happened. I want to continue this conversation. Thank you, Malik, Steve, Alan. Stay right here. As there continues to be speculation that neither President Biden or President Trump will actually be the nominee at their end of their political party's convention, all of this due to age or legal prosecution. We're going to debate the chances of this happening and who might be waiting in the wings to replace them with our panel. Welcome back. President Joe Biden is by far the front runner of the Democratic Party. However, one man has emerged as a potential thorn in his side. Representative Dean Phillips won 21% of the vote in New Hampshire in primary after only being in the race just for 90 days.
This state, you Granite Staters, practice democracy like no other state in this entire country. And the fact that the party I represent would have the audacity to take that from you and would have the audacity to say that this was meaningless? No, no. Your votes tonight were the most meaningful votes you've ever cast in your life, and I'll make that promise to you because I'm going to use them going forward.
Now, it'll be interesting to see if he tells South Carolina voters that their votes are most important. Now, meanwhile, the Democratic National Committee wanted to change South Carolina to be the first in the nation primary. But New Hampshire was not going to have it, as it is their state law to be the first primary held. This led to Biden being booted from the ballot, though he still made a historic win in the Granite State by receiving 55% as a write-in candidate. So should Democrats actually give Phillips a chance? Well, let's bring in our political panel back. Political analyst and GOP commentator Malik Abdul, Steve Gill, host of The Steve Gill Show, and former Congressman from Florida, Alan Grayson. Alan, we're in your wheelhouse right now. Do you think President Biden is physically and mentally fit enough to serve a 4 more years? And if not, why do you think the DNC is working so hard to suppress Dean Phillips?
Well, the answer to your first question is yes. To compare him to Trump, Trump has been incoherent and senile for most of his adult life. Biden at least takes a stab at remaining fit. My mother's 91 years old, and I think she could be president. In fact, the country would be a lot better off if she were president. So I don't see any problem with Biden serving in terms of health. And I think he's demonstrated that already, unlike Trump, who was always saying goofy things like, let's shine a big light up your butt and that'll cure COVID. Biden hasn't done anything comparable to that. Regarding whether the party should suppress Dean Phillips, I think when we finally get the super PAC reports for next month, we'll see that Dean Phillips very likely, and the 20-odd thousand votes that he got out of the 340 million Americans, the 20,000 votes that he got in New Hampshire is very likely GOP Wall Street money that was diverted to try to make President Biden look bad. Either that or Phillips reached into his own pocket. Now, if you compare that to a genuine, inspiring candidate like Marianne Williamson, you'll see the power of dirty money in our system on both sides, both Democratic and Republican. There's no way that Dean Phillips could come out of nowhere and get 20,000 votes in New Hampshire without somebody spending an awful lot of money to make that happen. Look at what happened with DeSantis. He ended up spending $1,500 per vote in Iowa. I'm guessing that Phillips' numbers will end up being the same as that. We just don't know who owns him. My guess, though, is it's GOP Wall Street fat cats.
Lots of strategy going here. More game than chess, I feel like, at this point. Malik, though, he brings up a good point about enthusiasm and Democrats and crossing over. I mean, we talked the same about Nikki Haley and Democrats crossing over to vote for her. Now, according to Congressman, Republicans voted over to put Dean Phillips in. Does this also, though, speak the need of a third party, the potential of a true third party in the future that people could get excited about? Because Dean's message right now is very positive. He was positive. He was at the Trump rally. He spoke lovingly about how he was treated. Are we seeing ourselves emerge for a third party? Maybe not next year, but later on. No Labels is a great example of it.
Yeah, No Labels is actually in a position now because they're trying to determine whether or not they're actually going to field candidates in the race. At some point, maybe we will. Definitely, we're not there. And as you said, maybe it's something that will happen years from now. I just will say, contrary to what the congressman said, Joe Biden is the one who's actually demonstrated, at least physically, visually, senility while in the White House, whether or not he's slurring, whether or not he's falling going upstairs, whether or not he's falling on bikes. Donald Trump hasn't exhibited that same thing. The only thing that he does, really, is golf. But I think that people have legitimate questions questions about not just how Biden's age, but his diminished capacity as president of the United States, because the Biden that we have now is not the same Biden that we had even 4 years ago. And I think that that is a legitimate concern.
You know, both parties have montages right now of their specific candidates. It's kind of funny to watch going up. They use them, they push them to show how the senility of their own candidate they're going up against. But Steve, take away all of that sort of, I almost call it like the petty distraction. There's some real issues concerning the Supreme Court. And are you concerned that the Supreme Court could actually rule in Colorado's favor and remove Trump from the ballot? Let me remind you, just recently we saw two Trump-appointed Supreme Court justice members go against the conservatives and actually rule in the favor of the Biden administration in regards to the border and what the governor was doing down there. Do you think there might be a chance they might do the same with this, and what could this mean for other states?
I think anything's possible. First, to touch on Malik's comments, I don't think that Joe Biden jogging for two steps shows a commitment to physical fitness or physical capability. His little two-step jogs are frankly just weird, and I'm not sure he can maneuver that on pavement, much less on grass. I do think that the Supreme Court case involving the border has been overstated to some extent. They did not rule on the case itself. They're giving the border agents some time to continue while the full briefing, the full debates are going on, and I'm not sure how that ends up at the end of the day. It is a pressure point. It is a bizarre moment in judicial history where the president doesn't know if the border is open or not. I guess, well, now he's saying that the border is open. His Secretary of Homeland Security is saying it's closed and has been closed. They can't get on the same page. But this is, again, a president whose mental acuity can't even let him keep up with where his Secretary of Defense is, with hundreds of millions of weapons that are lost in Afghanistan, with that deplorable debacle of an exit. And to argue that somehow foreign policy is something Americans are feeling comfortable with, not just abroad, but also on our own border, I think belies what people are seeing themselves. And, you know, Joe Biden can run around like Kevin Bacon at the end of Animal House screaming, all is well, all is well. I don't think that voters are buying it when they go to the grocery store, when they go to the gas pumps, when they see the chaos at the borders and the chaos in their big cities that has Democrat mayors screaming about the open border. I don't think people think all is well.
Right. Alan, I want to give you the last word on this, because obviously Steve and Malik both brought up immigration. It was number two in New Hampshire. I know Democrats want to focus on the abortion issue. Do you think the immigration issue needs a little bit more attention from the Democrat Party?
Well, my next last thing is to say how nice it is to see you again, Scott. But my last thing is to say that Joe Biden arrested 2.5 million people at the Mexican border last year, which is more than Donald Trump did during his entire administration. What's actually happening is that rich Republican billionaires are busing these people away from the border in order to create chaos in a way that actually it suits their purposes, but has never been done before in the history of the United States. So let's put the blame where it lies. It's not the people who are crossing the border, okay? They're being stopped by the Biden administration. It's not the Biden administration. It's the people who are using these immigrants as human tools and as human shields for their own failed policies. It was actually George W. Bush who let 8 million Mexicans cross the border, two-thirds of the ones who are here now. It was George W. Bush who did that.
And you cannot forget Ronald.
The Democrats is absurd.
And you can't forget that Ronald Reagan gave them all amnesty in 1986. So it's very interesting to watch Republicans now complain about an issue that they were a part of creating. Malik, Steve, Alan, I really appreciate you joining me. I appreciate your analysis. We'll have this on because obviously these same topics are going to come up until Election Day. The 2020 election year can only loosely be compared to one from an election year during wartime. Voter laws were amended in the name of public health and safety. Mail-in ballots were mass-produced, drop boxes voting was actually allowed, and longer early voting periods were all put in place. All of this, which hoped to not only give more opportunity for those to exercise their right to choose the next president, but to do so without endangering their health. Most of those policies have been terminated with this election cycle. And the return of in-person campaign rallies have replaced the stay in your car and honk your horn in support type events that we saw in 2020. This is a good thing, considering the debate over the integrity of the 2020 election led to not only the infamous protests on January 6th, but also damaged the credibility of the entire American election system. I hope a return to the more traditional process of electing the United States president will also restore the faith of the American people and eliminate any shade of doubt regarding a corrupt system, regardless of who is actually elected. Now, President Trump is looking for a win, all as a redemption, and President Biden is looking at a win as a mandate of the people to continue his agenda. But just like the old adage, it's not always the destination, but the journey, the 2024 election year is one which will be unpredictable and filled with more energy, despite having two of the oldest candidates for president in U.S. history. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 View. Thanks for watching.